So, I guess we can...
Do you want to lead us in this time?
Now you got this. this is gonna be in the final cut. Us talking like this.
Okay, sounds great. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Illumination Cinema Movie Podcast. I'm Tyler,
and I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yep. We're gonna talk about Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, which will count as one movie.
Yes.
Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained.
So, like the last one, this will probably be cut into two parts, so we'll probably only cover Reservoir Dogs to Jackie Brown in this one.
Yeah. And then Kill Bill will be its own podcast, since probably it's two movies. What's called the whole bloody podcast.
Yes. All right. So, do we need an introduction here, like as to why we chose this topic?
If you have an introduction, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Well, for starters, I should probably just a blanket statement for this whole podcast. Quentin Tarantino is my favorite director. So that's kind of one of the main reasons we moved forward with him so fast. And pretty much as soon as we finished watching Coen Brothers movies for the first two episodes, Chris had started marathoning Quentin Tarantino movies.
And I haven't stopped since. People at my work can quote Pulp Fiction now, I think. Probably also Kill Bill. That's what I do sometimes.
Chris.
Yes.
I guess before we start, we should probably say that you weren't the biggest fan of Tarantino before.
Yeah, it's because, like, the only thing I saw of him was, like, the only movies I saw he made were Pulp Fiction and, what was the other one?
Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. And from that, I guess I didn't, like, understand the style. I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I just was like, it's not one of those kind of movie people. Like, you know, like Rodriguez and Tarantino got through in that little corner of, like, the weird films.
Yeah.
they're still in the corner, by the way, that weird filmmaking corner, but...
Yes.
I guess, like, I watched Kill Bill. I loved Kill Bill so much. I was like, okay, I'm going to give this guy another chance. And so then I watched Django.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, so...
So
I was like, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, get more into all of those as we go along.
Yeah.
So I think we're ready to begin.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start off...
Real fast. I will say so that Tarantino has one distinction, which is that if you... do a poll. I forgot who did the poll, but the poll stated that the most influential filmmaker to people at in universities right now is Tarantino.
Oh, definitely.
Second place is Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
So
before Tarantino came along, it probably would have been Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
Number one.
Him, Hitchcock, any of those people like that. Mm-hmm. So
it's probably just that sort of high school dropout guy. Gets a film career. That's probably, I think, what regular people kind of see in him. But, you know, what I'm about to get into, I'll probably get into, like, at the very end. So,
mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
You have anything else to say?
No. I think let's just go and get into it and see what happens.
All right. Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, it's a great movie.
So a little backstory behind Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
It's Quentin Tarantino's first, finished feature film that, I think it was in Sundance, if I'm not mistaken.
You could actually argue though that his last film was kind of finished, but got burnt in a fire. Do you think that, like, he saw the film and was like, this film is horrible?
Have you ever seen out. My Best Friend's Birthday?
I have not seen it, actually.
You shouldn't. I'm a huge Tarantino fan, and I would not recommend My Best Friend's Birthday.
That's funny.
But, yeah. So, anyway, it was in Sundance, and it was a smash hit. And it kind of cemented, not cemented, but like...
Propelled.
Yeah, propelled him sort of into this national stage, which Pulp Fiction would later cement him in as this one of the great current directors.
Get the pronouns out of the way. Let's continue.
Yes. So, Reservoir Dogs. It's very great.
Yeah. I thought you said you didn't like it that much in comparison to other ones, though.
Yeah, I definitely. What I would say about Reservoir Dogs is it's probably his most immature film. And when I
have you seen the ending of Inglourious Basterds?
No, like, and I know I'm going to have to explain myself when I say that.
You're going to. Go ahead.
Okay, so
explain away.
I think that mostly what I'm saying is, like, both Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs have been, like, are praised for their dialogue, right?
Oh, yeah.
And how they're like it's mostly because it's criminals talking about, you know, like pop culture things. But I really feel like listening to the dialogue in Reservoir Dogs, and then I know almost every line of Pulp Fiction. So.
And by the way, audience, he knows every line from Pulp Fiction. Because now I'm gonna start learning all the lines from Pulp Fiction. This guy who keeps talking about the stupid. Lines from there.
Chris and I'll be in the middle of a conversation. He'll start quoting something from the movie, and then I'll quote the rest of the scene.
And I just sit there for about 5 hours listening to his renditions of Pulp Fiction.
Chris just sits there for 90 minutes as I recite the rest of the movie, including the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, but what
I think I'd do the soundtrack part. I sing it while you're doing the quotes.
As I'm talking with the driving scene, you're singing Jungle Bookie. Anyway, we're on Reservoir Dogs right now. And my point about the immature dialogue is, with his pop culture references, he seems to... This is Quentin's Look What I Know film. Did you get that sense at all? Like,
no.
Because, okay, like, if you watch it again, which I'm guessing you probably will many times.
Like yesterday.
When you watch it again, keep in mind, like, he's gonna, like, I can just imagine him sitting there writing it, like, yeah, I'm going to reference films that no one's ever heard of, all right? Yeah, it's going to be great. Like the guys will be talking about these movies, and it's like, oh, yeah, Quentin. Like, oh, I've never heard of that.
I think you're referring to the beginning part of the movie, especially where they're sitting there talking about Madonna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, he just references, like, all the characters talk about all these... all these movies that, like, the average person wouldn't know about. And it's like, you know, I get it. Like, it's fine that they're talking about them, but, like, I mean, they're clearly films. Like, and it's all of the characters, too. They're all talking about these sort of, like, obscure, like, Italian films. And it's like, this is just clearly Quentin going, look what I know.
No, you know what? I can excuse him because talking about movies, a movie right here, like, where somebody's writing about, like, what they know or whatever, this is how much I know.
Yeah.
If you watch Citizen Kane, it's basically just a movie about what this guy knows how to do with the camera.
Yeah.
And so for me, I can excuse anybody now because it's so, like, overt, because that movie was so overt and, like, it's like, oh, I'm so awesome, look at me.
Mm-hmm.
that I can now excuse any movie that has that same kind of issue.
Yeah.
nothing is as bad as that.
And it's really no mystery to anyone that Quentin kind of comes off like he loves himself and...
Listen. When everybody else loves you as well, I mean, it's kind of hard not to, you know.
If any director in Hollywood right now deserved to love himself as much as Quentin does, it's Quentin. even that little minor issue with it, I still love the movie. Like, it doesn't bog down the movie for me at all. But I kind of just sit there and like think of like on a personal level, like I can see Quentin doing that. And like you can definitely tell, like even by Pulp Fiction. I mean, he still does it in Pulp Fiction. He does it in all of his movies, but he definitely matured after Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah. You know, this movie, I was introduced to this movie basically, and the description of this was, it's a messed up movie, and you're gonna feel messed up after watching it. And I'm sitting there like watching this movie, and I'm like, this doesn't feel that messed up. Mm-hmm. And you know about talk about it right now, right? Don't you? The messed up part of the movie.
Yep.
There's a part in there where Mr.
Pause real quick. Just in case you don't know already, these podcasts have spoilers. So spoiler warning from here on out.
As I was saying, Mr. Blonde, who is played by
Michael Madsen.
Yep, Michael Madsen. Decides that he just, for, you know, the thrill of it, decides to torture this one cop.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, at first, like, he slashes him with, like, he kind of cuts him with a straight laser.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does a thing that's horrific to watch.
So heinous.
Where he decides to cut off the guy's ear.
Yeah.
And then he goes, "Hello, can you hear me?" From your lips into the ear.
Yes. Well, I
watch this movie and I'm just like, oh, that's okay. That's the part. And then he gets doused, like just like dumping the guy with gasoline, like just gasoline just being poured all over the guy.
Meanwhile, you got stuck in the middle with you playing in the background.
Yeah, that's right.
Like the funny thing about that scene, though, like in people's react, like, because not like, you know, the average audience doesn't really see anything like that back then, and I mean this was just 1992, yeah, like. But, like, people weren't used to that sort of, like, really dark humor. And, like, I mean, it wasn't even really... When you look at the scene and look at how it's shot, you don't even... Like, the camera goes away when he cuts off the ear, but yet it still has that impact.
Oh, yeah. Well, it even shows, like, that empty slot where the ear was at.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know... Oh God, I can't. By the way, we missed the important part was that like 3 to 5, whatever, a couple yards away or whatever it was, 3 to 4 yards away is Tim Roth's character.
Yeah.
Mr. Orange just bleeding out.
Yeah.
And apparently, like on set, they had like this like doctor person who was there, like making sure that the blood that was coming out of him was like at the appropriate amount. I'm like. The appropriate amount, like, is in, like, somebody getting, like, you know, like, getting drained of all their blood. Because I guarantee you, if I bled out that much right there, I would have died, like, 3 hours before that or something. But, yeah, like I said, he's, like, just bleeding out on a couple feet away, and while Mr. Blonde is, like, dousing the gasoline, and I'm just like, this is, like, the greatest imagery right here.
I know, right? And, like, I've seen Reservoir Dogs so many times, and yet, mm-hmm. like... I rewatched almost all of the films for the podcast, and it's still so intense. And it's so intense, and then he starts talking into the fucking ear.
Yes. No, the thing about this movie is like Harvey Keitel
mm-hmm.
and Steve Buscemi, like just like them talking back and forth.
Oh yeah.
Like arguing back and forth about stuff, it's like God, that was so good. Like, that's, I get, that's why Steve is, like, was, like, in all these different Tarantino and different, like, Rodriguez movies, because he's, like, a very, very good actor. Mm-hmm. He's very, very odd. And he's, like, perfect for Mr. Pink.
Yeah. He is exceptional for Mr. Pink.
Apparently, Tarantino wanted to be Mr. Pink. And then, like, Steve Buscemi, like, came out there and was like, I'm going to do better than you. Like, you obviously you did.
Yeah.
Tarantino was like, what,
Mr. Brown.
That's right, because of the poop.
It's kind of like Mr. Shit.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, you can't tell, Tyler loves doing Tarantino impressions.
I hope Quentin Tarantino never listens to this podcast, because I just called him immature and I do bad impressions of him. I love you, Quentin. Anyway.
I remember, like, one of the first times he did, like, the impression of it, and I'm like, that can't be that guy's voice. Oh. Well, the thing is, like, think about Quentin. I know we're, like, going off into your Reservoir Dogs for a second.
Yeah.
If you ever watch him.
God, that guy is a character.
In an interview. Is he on cocaine? I don't want to make rumors about him. But, like, he moves around, like, all... I can't do this on a podcast. Yeah, like, this is all audio. But, like, yeah. Visually, I'm, like, moving around a whole bunch. Like, yeah. Just like, ah, dude.
Yeah, the guy is in constant motion. Stop moving. He talks super fast.
But the thing about that, though, is that, like, I talk super fast, too. Mm-hmm. I have that same issue. But he's actually understandable. That's true. And also, he has, like, excitement that I love.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can tell that he just loves what he's doing so much. And that, like, the fact that he came out and said that, like, you know, 10 films sounds about right or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
For him, that is totally respectable. Mm-hmm. Totally respectable right there. Like, knowing that you have a limit and that you should, like, reach the limit and stop is great.
Oh, yeah. It's all about, like, the filmography to him, which is... And if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, Quentin has said basically that he's, and this could totally change, he doesn't exactly always keep to his word on things, but he said that, like, he's probably only going to do 10 films and then he'll retire, and he'll only do, like, 10 movies, but he'll keep, like, writing. He's talked about, like, how he's going to keep writing, like, material about film. I don't know if he said he'd still do
screenplays. Like, he says about writing books.
Yeah,
like, basically. Novels. Yeah, which is kind of cool. That's cool. You know, I mean, I would love to read a novel.
I would bury myself in novels by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
But you mentioned some of the acting in this movie, and I think...
Oh, yeah.
Buscemi... Mm-hmm. Tim Roth, Harvey Keitel, Michael Madsen, they're all fantastic.
Oh yeah.
They're so great.
I love the part where Tarantino is like blood's like draining to his eyes and I can't see. He's in like the front trying to drive or whatever and you're like wow. Which, by the way, we're gonna need to come back to that sort of thing in Django. So if you want to go first, I guess, if you have, like, a piece of trivia that you want to go first on. And
okay.
I'll follow up with you.
Let's see.
Follow up after you, not follow up with you, sorry.
Do we have anything else to say about the movie in general first?
Not anything that doesn't go into my trivia, so.
Well, okay, so a couple things I want to say. This movie has a great soundtrack, as with pretty much all the others. Harvey Keitel is practically the reason the movie exists, because
in the form it's in,
yeah. So that was a great move on his part.
Which, if you don't know what we're talking about, originally Tarantino had planned to, like, shoot it on, like, $30,000, and then all of a sudden, like, Keitel got the script from somebody. I've got, like, how that all happened.
I think it's, like, Lawrence Bender. had, like, knew somebody who had an acting teacher who was friends with Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, which is, like, a great...
coincidence.
Yeah, pretty much. It's, and I guess, like, Keitel got it and was like, oh, this is great. I want to, like, produce this thing. So here's, like, my resources, and got to, like, I think it was, like, the budget. It was, like, over, it was a little over $1 million.
Yeah.
Let's see here on the Wikipedia page. It says 1.2? 1.5?
That's yeah. Yeah, it's, like, either 1.2 or 1.5.
Mm. That's cool.
But, yeah. And I'd also say, like, my only other, like, minor issue with the movie is I think it's not badly paced, but it drags a little bit at points.
Speaking of dragging, no, it's not gonna be my segue to Pulp Fiction, but I actually realize I have a couple trivia things. By the way, I'm gonna go ahead and preface this by saying I have unpopular opinions.
I'm curious as to what it is, because he hasn't told me about it yet.
Yeah, hey, but so the my trivia though for Reservoir Dogs would be that the first draft was written in 3.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. If you've never written a feature film, 3.5 weeks is extreme. I wrote like one act of a script in one of my classes. Mm-hmm. It took me a whole week to write the whole thing, and like it was just like this stressful writing. Like as a writer, I usually write like a page or so a day, and so you had to write 30 pages essentially a day. And this man, I think it was like what, four hours worth of I guess it was like about 4 hours worth of script that he wrote. It's like,
probably,
how did you write that in 3 weeks?
It's all the guy did, man.
Yeah. And according to the trivia on IMDb, George Clooney, I got this going on here. George Clooney read for Mr. Blonde, but was turned down. It's like,
I'm okay with that.
As good as Michael Madsen is, I am a huge fan of Clooney, and so I like both choices. Let's have them just both play it, you know.
Yeah, they'll just switch out every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Michael Madsen's character kind of will lead us into the next movie.
No, hold on. You forgot the body count.
Okay, well, the body count is at 11 in Reservoir Dogs.
Mm. And
yes. All by gun.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And then Chris has all the body counts for each of these movies. Yep. I took it upon myself to get a count of all the times they said fuck in the movies, because Quentin Tarantino is known for saying fuck a lot.
And the other word.
Yeah. I only wrote that down for two movies. So
should I take a guess? Jackie Brown and Django.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the word fuck is only said 272 times in Reservoir Dogs.
That's not that much. I have watched Phone Booth and like that way more. Did you ever watch that movie?
No.
That movie was like every single sentence had that word in it. It's just like, all right. You can calm yourself down.
Calm down, bro.
Yeah. All right. I guess we're probably wrapped up on Reservoir Dogs.
Yep.
So after two failed segues.
It's your fault, Chris.
Shut up. Let's go to Pulp Fiction,
yes.
Which I will actually let you take the reins on this one,
because
I'll do that for the last half.
Pulp Fiction is a fantastic movie.
It would make a great short film. Sorry, continue.
Fuck you, Chris.
Tyler's very abusive.
Okay. Much like Reservoir Dogs, I'd say mm-hmm. that this movie has a really great cast of Bruce Willis, John Travolta, Lawrence Fishburne, and Uma Thurman. So, do you have anything to say about the movie, Chris?
If you took the beginning of the movie, mm-hmm. the diner,
yeah,
you took the part where it's Vincent Vega and Marcellus Wallace's wife,
mm-hmm.
and you skip the part where Marcellus Wallace's wife and Vega are together, and you go to the gold watch part, the Christopher Walken part,
mm-hmm.
and then you skip the gold watch part, and you go to the Bonnie situation and the epilogue diner. It's a great movie.
Okay.
Do you think I'd like... Actually, no. The gold watch part's fine, actually, though, with Bruce Willis and... God, what's the guy's name? What's the big dude?
Ving Rhames?
Ving Rhames, yeah. It's fine. The part that I don't like is the entire section with John Travolta and Uma Thurman.
Really?
Uma Thurman's great, but John Travolta is such a terrible actor. I'm sorry.
He's not terrible in this.
He's
a terrible actor, yeah. But he's under good direction. I think this is just like a Joaquin Phoenix thing where you're going to hate him no matter what.
No. That's not true whatsoever. I will think of a movie that I like him in, and I will tell you about it soon.
I feel like he plays his character very well in this movie.
Grease
is a movie you like?
He's good in it.
I haven't seen it since, like, sixth grade.
Oh, and, what was that stupid movie?
Don't you dare say Saturday Night Fever.
All right, so Pulp Fiction. Starting a fever. Actually, I like that movie.
But
it's just like I don't know his character. Maybe it was the character. Mm. His character is just so boring to me, and just like
he is probably the least interesting character.
Uma Thurman was terrific. I think she's a great actress.
See, like that part is what. That's why I don't understand why you would cut that part out, because like Uma Thurman's so great.
Well, it's like part of it, beginning of it, it's like kind of boring. Then once it gets into like the dancing, that's fun. That's a fun part right there.
Oh God, the whole thing is so great.
And then it gets like the drug part. It's like a little boring. All of a sudden, like when she has like her when she like ODs, that's a lot of fun to watch. That's funny.
God.
Like because they're trying to like figure out, like.
You stab her three times. No, you don't stab her three times.
See, that was great. And then it's like, we kind of the very end. But then you cut to the greatest scene in the movie. Well, it's third greatest scene in the movie. It was Christopher Walken.
Your father wore this watch for 5 years in his ass.
Did you know, like, Christopher Walken, like, the reason why he talks like that is, like, when he was younger, he decided that he didn't like the comma placement in the English language. And so, like, he would, like, in school, he would put a comma, like, where he wanted it to be.
Wow.
So he felt that, like, that's the way it should be. And so that's why he talks like that. It's like that's just the way he has to talk.
That's ridiculous. You know,
whatever. It's just like
that's just the way he has to talk.
By the way, I wasn't meaning to do like an impression there. I just started talking like him because you say his name, and you start talking like him. It's like a thing.
He'd be damned if you let like he'd get the greasy yellow hands on his son's birthright.
Oh God! Great movie.
I love Pulp Fiction.
Just like there's like three parts that I just can't stand. All the rest of it's terrific.
So it's
overall a terrific movie.
Okay, here's what I'm asking. Bad. So
okay.
I'm trying to figure out the other two parts because you have John Travolta taking out Mia Wallace, and then what else?
And then, like, I don't know, like, it's, like, the scene, like, where Ving Rhames is about to be, like, sodomized.
We should probably note that Chris has a problem with rape in movies.
Actually, that wasn't the biggest issue that's out there. It just was like, I don't care about this character.
I see.
I think it's more about
Bruce Willis making the decision to do that. If someone didn't know what happened in the scene, making the decision to sodomize Ving Rhames.
I would watch. I would love that. It's a great scene.
You know, I think I'm going to do this. And then he whipped out his guy. What was the other part, though?
Well, there's the little bits, just like the little bits and pieces from the Vega and Marcellus's wife, and then that little bit right there from the Gold Watch.
Mm.
I think this was fine. I think it was great. My favorite. Should we talk about like favorite parts of the movie, or talk about like you know?
We probably have the same favorite part. We go ahead.
Everybody, of course, obviously says Samuel L. Jackson,
mm-hmm.
where he gives like that entire speech. However, there's a part in the movie where Tarantino shows up.
Yes. I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, all right?
It's like the only film like he's in where he doesn't die.
That's true. That's Jackie like, Brown, he's the answering machine.
Oh, that's right.
Which, okay. He's probably the worst answering machine. Again, if you're listening, Quentin, I'm so sorry. But
okay, but we're not on Jackie Brown yet, which... Oh, God. We're just starting in my unpopular opinions. Okay. No, that where Tarantino shows up in the Bonnie situation is probably...
where the wolf shows up is my favorite.
Yeah, I love the fact that the wolf... Who is played Harvey by? Keitel. Yep, and I thought that he's like totally nice to Tarantino's character.
Yeah, and he's
like he's like so polite.
He's taking no shit from Sam Jackson or John Travolta. Like Jimmy, he's so nice to him.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, you're welcome, Mr. Wolf. It's like oh, so nice. God, and like the scene like where
pretty please with sugar on top, clean the fucking car.
Let's do that one. So let's say that. But Keitel is a great actor.
Oh, he's so great.
I love the fact that also like you can tell who Tarantino really really loves working with.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Keitel shows up a couple times in his movies. Tim Roth shows up a few times, you know, and so it's like you know that. They like working together, mm-hmm. at least. That's good.
Did you love the part? You've got to love this part in the Vega Mia Wallace scene where Steve Buscemi shows up as a waiter.
Why am I drawing a blank?
He's Buddy Holly.
Oh.
You don't recognize him in the role, but it's him. It's funny. Hilarious because he doesn't tip as Mr. Pink.
I didn't think about that actually. I didn't realize he was in. Yeah, that's really him.
Yeah, it's him.
Oh,
if you look like, because I always forgot again. Every time I watched it, but then like you just listen to his voice and you can tell, holy shit, that's Steve Buscemi. That's funny.
Okay, I need to remember that. One thing about this movie also is like, it's probably hailed as like one of the greatest films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like for influencing filmmakers.
Oh, definitely.
And this is why does that like this film was I forgot what number it was now. The list of like the best films of all time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was Entertainment Weekly, that's what I was thinking of. Mm. At least that. But like any like college campus you go on to, people are like, oh, it's Pulp Fiction, best movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying about Tarantino being like it's such an influential director.
Yeah.
It's because of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, I think, are the two biggest reasons why people are like, oh, he's like so influential, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that because it's actually it's a fantastic movie for the most part.
If John Travolta wasn't playing that role, do you think you would have liked it better?
Yeah, probably.
Because but like, that whole like.
In defense of John Travolta, the part where he shoots Marvin, and he says the line, "Oh man, I just shot Marvin in the face," makes me laugh so hard. It's I can't tell if it's like the pacifism of like the that passive the passiveness.
He's just so
of
the character nonchalant like, about it.
The nonchalant is like it was like so good. I can forgive everything else because of that part.
Yeah. And I think I already told you that the guy playing Marvin is Phil LaMarr, who voices Samurai Jack.
Yeah. Which is a great, great influence on Tyler and Mai's life.
Yes.
That's for much later podcast, unfortunately.
Yes. That'll be talked about eventually. One funny thing, like there's a lot of people kind of go outside the movie with sort of their thought. Like a lot of people like, go to the briefcase and like there's a whole bunch of theories surrounding that. And I dismiss all of that because I don't.
I have a spoiler for you. It's a light bulb.
Yes. but one thing that's really great and like Tarantino.
No, it's literally a light bulb in there. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. No, I know.
Okay. There's a picture of like the actual briefcase, like with the light bulb in it.
Yes, I love that picture.
Because like the picture I first saw was like, it was tagged, not tagged. Had the headline was like, "What's really in the briefcase?"
I love that because like I hate that sort of thing in movies, and I can tell like they didn't intend for it to be like that. That
Rosebud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which way look at Ricky if they didn't see Citizen Kane? Okay.
Yeah. But one thing that Tarantino has like sort of confirmed is that Butch is the one who keyed Vince's car.
Yeah,
I think that's amazing.
Yeah. Actually, I don't have any. Any trivia for that? I kind of gave you the trivia on this one, by the way, in case you're wondering. As far as like trivia notes.
Yeah. Do you have the body count for it?
I do. Take a guess.
I don't know.
Just like on like just you know just.
I'm trying to think of people who I God, there's a lot. 10.
Not really, actually. No.
It's somewhere between like 7 and 10.
It's 7.
Ah, that's right.
Yep, 7 people died. Because people in the apartment, and then the creepy sodomizing people.
Zed the Gimp and whoever else, the pawn shop owner.
Marvin.
Not Sam Jackson. John Travolta. We've hardly praised Sam Jackson enough. He's so great.
That's right. Which, of course, I guess we should talk about, like, the fact that that whole speech is basically, like, one of the most quoted, one of the top quotes of all time.
Yes.
If you, like, look at any like, those, like, top 100 quotes of all time, it's, like, right there.
That monologue is so amazing. Yep. And, God, I knew I had it. He's because we said that the wolf scene is the best scene, but that's definitely the runner up. And I think Samuel L. Jackson's the best character in the movie.
Oh yeah, I've always said that. Like, if you just took the scenes with Samuel L. Jackson in it, and slapped them together, it'd probably still be one of the best short films of all time. So it's just so good.
One thing, another little kind of a piece of trivia for Reservoir Dogs. Samuel Jackson auditioned for Reservoir Dogs and didn't get a part. So he talked to Quentin at a festival somewhere, and Quentin made sure to write Jules' character for Sam Jackson. And he's been in every movie since, I'm pretty sure.
Probably.
Maybe not Death Proof. Forgot about that.
Oh yeah, he would be Death Proof. But yeah, let's get the death count. So we'll just.
Oh, and I forgot the fuck count for this movie. mm-hmm. is 265.
Wow. That's actually not that bad. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be way worse than that,
I think they get less and less.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, except for Jackie Brown, probably. Does it actually? Does that one have more, or is it Reservoir Dogs has more?
Reservoir Dogs has more. The count's going to go down.
Okay, but the...
the number's still high.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so... I'm trying to think of anything else for Pulp Fiction that we'll talk about.
It's... I don't know. It's one of my favorite movies, but I have a hard time talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, it totally deserved, like, all the money it made, all the awards it made, all that stuff. Just, like...
Essentially, everything I'll say about this movie is just going to be gushing over scenes.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we can probably move on to, Jackie Brown.
Okay, motherfucker, why don't you like this movie?
God. Oh, God. It's because... What's your name? Pam?
Pam Greer?
Greer, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
That's Greer. Greer. Okay. Is not a good actress to me. I just can't stand her in this movie. Because she sucks.
Really?
She just sucks so much. Everybody else's movie is so good. And every time it goes back to her, I'm like, this is so boring. Just keep it on Robert De Niro the entire time.
Yeah. Sam Jackson's also in this movie. Like I said, he's going to be in the rest of the movies we talk about.
You know who's a great actor? Forrester,
is that his last name?
Forrester, yeah.
Yeah,
Forrester.
He's so good in this.
And it's like, whenever he's in the scene, it's fine. But if it's like her talking, I'm like, oh, I don't care.
You know a problem I have with Robert Forrester?
What?
Whenever he shows up in something, I always think his name is Max Cherry, which is his name in the movie.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck's wrong with you? Okay, but, like, honestly, this sounds horrible, but, like, I wanted her to die in this movie, so I have to listen to her, like, just not her, like, actual person, but, like, the character, Jackie Brown, just to die, because I was like, I can't stand.
I don't get it, man.
I can't stand her. Like, whenever...
I don't think you have an unpopular opinion. I think most people don't like this movie. And I think it's mostly because they were thinking of it as a follow-up to Pulp Fiction.
Well, that's like, I actually like a lot of, like, black exploitation films. At least the ones I've seen, I actually like them.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds kind of weird, but I actually liked the Shaft movie with Samuel L. Jackson. You know what?
Have I forced you to watch Dolomite yet?
No, I haven't watched it yet, and I'm going to eventually. That or, like, you know, you watch Black Dynamite.
Oh, God, I haven't seen it yet, and I want to.
You know, those are fun movies.
Yes.
They're always fun. And this is fun until you have her on screen. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I can see what you're talking... I don't agree with you, but... Yeah. I can see what you're talking about. The scenes definitely slow down a lot when it's centered around Jackie.
You know who is a great actress in this, though?
What's her name?
Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, that's right. all she has to do is sit around and act high.
Because she does such a great job that when Robert De Niro goes ahead and just shoots her, I applauded. Not because of the fact that, like, not because she's a bad actress, but she was so good this part.
Yeah.
That it was so, like, oh,
it's
God.
So satisfying. Yes. Because she's just, like, bitching him out. It's fantastic. He just fucking shoots her in the parking lot.
Yep. And it's like, this is so great.
That's probably, by the way, that's my favorite scene in the movie.
I also thought that he's, like, nonchalant about it as well.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He just shoots her and drives away.
Yes. Who was actually a huge surprise to me in the movie was Michael Keaton.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I was expecting Michael Keaton to show up. I was like, wow, Michael Keaton's in this. That's kind of cool. Michael Keaton's a fun guy. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched him anything else except for like the Batman movies, you need to watch like him in Johnny Dangerously. That's a great movie. That's actually that movie right there was the reason why people like kept talking about like how they don't want Michael Keaton to be Batman. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this guy like does comedy movies or blah, yeah, blah. Clearly can do Batman. It also can very much do, very obviously can do this role as well.
Yes.
Because I liked him in this, you know.
Yeah,
he's Chris fantastic. Tucker was in it. And
yeah. Was this the first time, because I know Quentin casts comedians in a lot of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
And was this the first
especially,
time
happened? Especially as like very serious roles too.
Yeah, yeah.
A crazy thing.
Skipping ahead a little bit, Jonah Hill is in Django Unchained.
Yeah, as a role that got cut down, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think who else is in this movie that was like, oh, this guy's in this movie.
This movie had a lot of great performances, and it's so weird to like when you think back to like think these people worked with Quentin Tarantino and you kind of forget about it. This is the movie that everyone forgets about.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that just because it's like, it's probably not his best work.
Yeah.
I rank this with Death Proof.
Have you seen Death Proof yet?
I have seen Death Proof, actually.
Okay, good.
I finally saw it. I was like, I gotta see this movie now.
You gotta sit through it at least once.
You know, I think that like Death Proof just was kind of a rush job.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely.
I jumped to Death Proof for a second there. Like, it felt like it was just kind of a rush job. And that's why, like, messing with Jackie Brown kind of felt like a rush job as well.
Mm-hmm. Death Proof feels like a first draft.
Mm. This one didn't actually feel like it was a first draft. It's like, I feel like it was a miscast for the main character.
It was also, it's just a very different movie for him. This was his first and only adaptation, so that's an interesting thing.
This was an adaptation?
Yeah, it's an adaptation of a book. I'm sure he took a lot of liberties with it, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think the main character was a man.
Oh, it was called Rum Punch.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny, okay.
Oh, another fun piece of trivia. Actually, a couple. The casting director for this movie is named Jackie Brown. Spelled differently.
Is that why they got the role? Oh, not role, I mean the job. Yeah.
Maybe. she was probably in charge of casting Pam Grier.
Maybe.
You would have fired her. Another probably. Fun piece of trivia. When Max is exiting the theater, you can hear the end credits, the music from the end credits playing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's my opinion on this movie. That's probably about all I got, but I don't have a lot for this one. This one's kind of, eh.
How many on-screen deaths, Chris?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. It's only four.
Yeah, that makes... Yeah. I knew it wasn't going to be a lot.
And since we talked about Death Proof, I'll go and tell you I had six.
Ah, yes. Yes. We're going to have to label this one as Jackie Brown / Death Proof.
Do you have anything about Death Proof you want to talk about?
It's very slow, and I'll probably watch it again at some point, but...
Yeah.
It's... You have to sit through it.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not like it's a long movie either. So yeah. It's not like,
but it feels long.
Yeah, Kurt. I mean,
it won't. Like and you know what it is? It's because it builds up and then pays off, and then has to do it again.
Oh yeah.
Mm. But yeah. So,
okay.
Total number of fucks in this movie, 131. Mm-hmm. He dropped by like 100.
Wow, yeah, I can see that, yeah. It's pretty good.
Total number of N-bombs in this movie, 38.
Thank you, by the way, for using the word N-bomb instead of just saying the word.
I usually don't, because I have an opinion about that, but
yeah.
For you, Chris.
You should go and just say it. Go ahead and just say it, Tyler. Tyler, just say it. Go ahead and say it. Just kidding.
I was referencing. I'm going to put a link down in the description.
To the best interview ever. let me just describe this really quick. Samuel L. Jackson was doing an interview for Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to talk about the controversy surrounding the use of the N-word in the movie. And Samuel L. Jackson refused to talk about it unless the interviewer would say it. And Samuel Jackson, being the most intimidating motherfucker on the planet, was scaring the living shit out of the guy. And he wouldn't say it because he would have gotten fired.
Yeah, pretty much. Which, like I said, there'll be a link to the...
yes, that is a must watch.
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, guys, that's the end of the first part. We will talk about Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, and Django Unchained in part two. So, catch you next time on the Illumination Cinema Movie Podcast. Thank you for listening to the Illumination Cinema Movie Podcast. Be sure to leave your correspondence and subscribe for more. For updates on this show and our other projects, check out illuminationcinema.com. Thank you.